You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702. Family Matters.
Get your calls in now, 011-883-0702. If you are a parent that is in a co-parenting arrangement with an estranged partner, with a divorced husband or wife, and you're a little bit confused about what the law says now during the time of COVID-19, give us a call now, 011-883-0702. This Family Matters slot is brought to you by HOSMED Medical Scheme. HOSMED Medical Aid is about choice. Hashtag what's your color? And joining us for the Family Matters slot is Shando Turon, divorce and custody specialist. Shando.
Hey, how are you doing, Nicholas?
Hey, disappointed we couldn't do it in studio, but alas, this is the world we live in at the moment. I see you've also lost your beard. You're trying to keep those COVID-19 germs off your face.
Well, I thought I was going to go like full-on lockdown, prison lockdown, and, you know, to get ready for it, I shaved off everything. I'm basically hairless from the neck down. But I hate it.
Well, geez, man. And what a pity as well. If you're going full prison lockdown as well, you're going to be in short supply of cigarettes, which I'm told is the currency in the slammer.
Apparently, it's a currency only in the slammer, but it was a currency until recently in my home. I've swapped it with bubble gum, and I've chewed so much bubble gum at the moment, I think my jaw is about to go into its own lockdown.
Oh, it's good to have a little laugh because we are going to be dealing with some very serious matters now. Yep. Co-parenting at the best of times is extremely delicate. Comes to the end of the divorce, courts deciding where custody goes. If the children are lucky enough to have parents that went through a divorce that sees equal access and there's a meaningful relationship with both parents, I mean, that is ideally the best outcome. But it's not as easy as that in the majority of cases, surely.
No, you know, Nicholas, what the sort of the idiosyncrasy or the irony of co-parenting is that you actually have to get along better to co-parent successfully than you did during the marriage. Now, of course, if the marriage ended in divorce, that's not setting the bar very high for getting along. However, the vulnerable people in the relationship, which are the children, still need both parents and need both parents to co-parent and take and, you know, put their own interests aside for the interests of the children. Now, the document that does that is the parenting plan. And the parenting plan sort of gives the rules of the game. Imagine you and your ex-partner now have to go and play a game of tennis, the children being the ball. The parenting plan sets the rules of that game. It also sets with what you do if you guys have a dispute, and that it stops. It's been proven the world over. I mean, you don't need to be rocket science for this. It's not good for children, the vulnerable in this relationship, if the parents are involved in adversarial litigation. So the parenting plan will have an alternate dispute resolution mechanism, usually mediation. Mediation before litigation, and that's just like that. But what the parenting plan doesn't deal with is what the world is currently going through. Nothing deals with this. And I think government itself is also grappling a little bit, and there's been contradictory messages coming out. Right now, Nicholas, if I may, I'm looking here at a government directive published on 26 March by the Minister of Justice, and it's directive published in terms of the State of Emergency Act. And section 2 or 8.2 in that directive says the following: arrangement where a child is to move from one parent to another in terms of the parenting plan must be attended to. What does it say? So this sort of says, well, if a child then has to move around between the two parents, it must be attended to. Then I'm looking at a regulation right now from the Minister Ndiwesu Sisulu, which says the following on page 24. The child shall remain in the custody of a parent with whom the child was when the lockdown was effected. The parent who was not with the child during the lockdown, in order to remain a personal relationship with the child, may communicate on a regular basis with the child. So here you've got two sort of communiques from government. One is being made into law, and the other one is a directive from the minister, which are in direct contradiction to each other. So the question is, what do you do now?
Well, that's exactly it, right? I mean, we are faced with a situation of mass uncertainty on so many levels, and government's not doing itself any favors if it's seemingly making it up as it goes along. It issues one directive in writing, and then ministers try and give voice to another approach days after.
Look, for once, I don't blame government. This is a new situation for everybody. Nicholas, I'm a co-parent myself. I'm a divorced parent myself. I'm making it up as I go along. So if government tries to make it up as they go along, you know, I don't blame them. So what do we do in a situation like this? And what do I do in a situation like this? You know, I myself am sitting wondering, what do I do? My clients are phoning me for advice. So here's what you do in a situation like this. My father, many things about him I didn't understand, but God bless his soul. One thing he did say, in situations of uncertainty, common sense. Now, I know common sense is rather uncommon, but I think common sense should prevail. And the Constitution also helps us out here, and the Children's Act. The Constitution in Section 28(2) and the Children's Act in Section 7 is quite clear on what the yardstick is of anything, and I mean anything to do with children, and that is the child's best interest. Now, what would be in your child's best interest? Let's say I'm now missing my children, and I want to see my children. This is not a real-life situation. Not an academic conversation. This is real. I am sitting here, and I'm missing my children. What do I do? Okay. Well, the bottom thing is, what would be in the children's best interest? Would it be in the children's best interest for me to sort of quench my miss of them and going to see them? Or would that be in their best interest for them to be exposed to twice as many people? What if I'm currently asymptomatic and I am a carrier and I've been infected? I've been to enough courts, and some of the courts where I've been, there's been positive tests. So what if I myself am infected and now I go to my children because I missed them? Would that be in their best interest? Well, it would be convenient for me, but it wouldn't be in their best interest. And common sense would dictate that if a child, the least people a child is exposed to, the less their chances of infection. I mean, that would be common sense, wouldn't it? So that's what I'm sitting with and grappling myself at the moment. But also, what is also evident when it comes to common sense, there are times when it would be essential for the other parent to go to the children. What would some of the situations be? Now, I've been sitting thinking about it. What if the other parent, and here's a difficult one, I don't have an answer to this. What if the other parent falls ill and has to go to hospital? Now, the children themselves might be carriers. What do you as a parent do? You're going to have to go, and I don't see any other issue with you going and having to collect those children, or at least taking. It's difficult. I don't know what to do, I must say, in this situation. What if the other parent falls ill and has to go to hospital? Do you now go and collect your children, and that would mean they will then infect you? It's a tricky situation, Nicholas. So I understand if government's falling around. I think everyone's falling around at the moment, but I think let common sense prevail and what is in the children's best interest. I can tell you what I would do in that situation. I would risk my own health and obviously go and collect my children. I wouldn't leave them alone. But it's a tricky, tricky situation. And also there is no one size that fits all here. What is in the children's best interest in one situation is certainly not going to be in the children's best interest in another situation. So there is no clear cut answer here. It's common sense. And it's what is in the children's best interest, not what is convenient for the parents. But, Nicholas, we are dealing with situations here which we have never, never had to deal with.
True story. Shonda Teron, divorce and custody specialist, matrimonial lawyer on the line there. We're talking about co-parenting in the time of COVID-19. We are dealing with such difficult things as individuals, as a society, as a global community, and this is just one of them. If you are a recent divorcee, you haven't ironed out where your kids are going yet. Maybe the divorce settlement isn't in place. The custody is still being deliberated by the courts. I want to hear all about it. Give us a call now, 011-883-0702. You can also send us a WhatsApp voice note, 072-702-1702. And drop us an SMS as well if you feel like it, 31702. And last but not least, hit me up on Twitter at Niklas Bauer. On twitter.com. So in the next part of the hour, Shonda, I'm going to be finding out where the law stands in terms of parents that are divorced, that have an agreement in place about who should share custody and the like, where they stand when they decide to stay together. So in other words, move into one another's homes during the COVID-19 lockdown, because it means that it's just easier from a parenting perspective. We'll unpack that as well as your stories next on 702 for the Curious.
702 Family Matters.
It's indeed Family Matters on 702 for the curious. Nicholas Bauer keeping you company until midday in the Eusebius Mukasa show. Shonda Turon, divorce and custody specialist, matrimonial lawyer on the line, talking about co-parenting during this period. Shez in Centurion, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nicholas. It's Shez in Centurion. I have an issue which I feel needs to be brought to light. This morning I heard on your earlier show people speaking about the government discussing changing the smoking law, that they'd be able to go and buy a cigarette. I'm divorced. My son lives with me. He's 12 years old. And in my original divorce agreement, my ex-husband could only see him every second weekend. My ex-husband and myself have an excellent relationship. He comes every night to see my son. My son spends Tuesdays and weekends with him. Every night my son is in tears because he can't see his father. Now, I don't understand how come the government isn't looking at somehow changing this arrangement. My ex-husband smokes, so they prefer that he goes to the shop every day, is exposed to other people in the local spa, instead of him having the choice to say, I will only drive to my ex-wife, see my son and drive home. I feel this is very unfair. And very unfair to fathers in general and mothers who don't have their children.
Shez, thank you very much for sharing your story there. And I mean, Shonda, it does seem a little bit ludicrous, to my mind anyway. I mean, for gosh sakes, you need your lungs during the time of COVID-19, but here we are deliberating about whether or not we're going to lift the cigarette ban. I would argue parental care, parental love is more important than nicotine, wouldn't you say, Shonda?
Yes, I agree with you.
Shonda, go ahead.
Shez, it's a bit of a tricky situation, but I understand. Of course, the common sense approach would be, Shez, why don't you just go out and buy the cigarettes, have the cigarettes at your house, and then you can come over and see your son and collect the cigarettes. But anyway, that's just off the side. Yes, Shez, I understand what you're going through, and very, very good for you, might I add, that you have a good relationship with your ex. That is what is to be strived for. Your son is ultimately the beneficiary of that relationship. And the fact that your child misses his father and gets emotional about not seeing his father, that is such a good thing. It's not you haven't alienated your child, you haven't turned your child against the father, and as a matter of fact, you are encouraging the father seeing the child. So if there's anything out of this that I can say, well, I can just simply say, yes, it's a tricky situation, but Shez, well done to you.
Thank you. Thank you. And everybody stay safe.
Hey, we'll do our best. Shez and Centurion, thank you very much for that. What is your experiences thus far co-parenting during COVID-19? Send us your SMSs into 31702. We got Joy in Polokwane. The situation where a parent becomes sick during lockdown does not just apply to co-parenting. It also applies to single parents. I don't think being divorced should give people special privileges that those who were never married do not have. Point taken. Joy in Polokwane. I'll get to Robin in Johannesburg in a moment, but first, Jeffrey in Pretoria. Jeffrey?
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Under the circumstances, happy, my man. Yeah, under the circumstances, that is.
Trust me, everyone is going through it. You know, conversation has got since I slept literally at 2 o'clock thinking about my son. Unlike the previous caller who's got a good relationship with an ex, my ex-wife and I separated in December. It's about 3 months now. I haven't seen her. And, you know, I've only seen him for like a period of 3 hours. And this is 3 times within the past 3 months. So, you know, it's been a very unfair situation. And I can see it's affecting my child. And issues between her, you know, myself and her, are affecting, you know, me being able to see the child. I've only recently, my lawyer sent a letter concerning maintenance and visitation of the child so we can regulate it. You know, she said she'd come back to us with a lawyer. But the problem is now the COVID-19 pandemic is prevalent. And I'm worried, you know, how am I going to be able to see my child? I mean, I can't even video call him just to say how is he. So it is a very worrying concern for me, and I'm not sure what to do going forward.
Jeffrey, thank you very much for being brave and sharing your story with us. It's a very personal one. I can hear that it's really affecting you. I could only imagine not being able to share special moments and love with your child at a time like this. Shandu, where do we even begin?
Yeah, Jeffrey, firstly, your situation is not uncommon. It's been made more common by the COVID-19, but your situation is a situation that I've had to run to court to with often, where one parent is restricting or completely stopping the other party's contact with their child, and it's not with their child. Jeffrey, is there any way to establish contact with her via SMS or anything like that?
I've tried everything. I mean, I sent an SMS yesterday morning saying, take care of yourself. We're about to go to stage 3. Things are about to go haywire. We're not sure how long this is going to. She doesn't even reply. Just to wish her well and safe within this period, she wouldn't even reply. I mean, it's terrible.
Jeffrey, here's my advice to you. Every day at the same time, send her a message. So, hi, I would like to video call. It's 4 o'clock now. I would like to video call my son at 4:05 for 5 or 10 minutes. Send her the same message every day, right? Keep that message, keep it, save it, and also when you make the video call, keep a record of the call. Should you then run to court once this is over and say, listen, my access to my son is being barred, he alleges must prove, you will have all the proof. You'll have 21 messages and 21 missed phone calls.
Okay.
Write that message, when you write that text message, you're not writing it to her. You're writing it to the judge. Keep that in mind. No matter how aggrieved you are, no matter how angry you are, my advice is always, when you write that text message, when you write that email, you're not writing it to her. You're writing it to the judge. Keep that in mind. Just keep that in mind. So every day at the same time you send her that message, and you make that phone call at the same time. You do not get involved in a tit-for-tat with her. You do not ask her permission. You simply say, at this time, I will be calling my son for a video call. And then you keep the record of the message, and you keep the record of the missed call. And should your junior attorney then have to attend on court to enforce your contact rights, you will have all the proof and more. But just remember, Jeffrey, you're writing that email, you're writing that text message to the judge. Keep it neutral.
Jeffrey in Pretoria, good luck. Good luck, Jeffrey in Pretoria. Anybody else that is facing a similar situation, co-parenting in the time of COVID-19, it's 7:02 for the curious. Niklas Bauer here in conversation with Shandu Turon. Robin in Johannesburg, you are a parent that's dealing with this exact thing, and you're doing it quite maturely.
Yes, Nick. I'm very, very fortunate that my ex-husband and I are on quite amicable terms. So when the lockdown was announced, we decided that I would move back into the cottage on his property so that our child would be with both of us during the lockdown.
How has that gone thus far?
I think it's a good reminder why we decided not to carry on living with each other. But I think we've both been very accommodating and polite to each other. Our daughter is very, very happy to be around both of us. And I think, it's been tough. I think along with the general anxiety of the situation and having to work from home and having to do full childcare instead of sending her off to school. It's also been the best option that we both could have thought of in a very horrible situation. So it's been fine.
Shandu, I mean, I'm just talking as a layman here, but also as a child of a divorced parenting unit. I salute you, Robin. Well done. You guys have made this decision in the best interests of. How old is your daughter now?
She's 4 years old.
Four. Shandu, what's your thoughts?
Robin, I commend you. We need more of you. And what I'm going to say now, I'm not going to say in jest. I'm actually quite serious. When this is over, you should actually consider writing just a quick little manual or a little booklet. And I think you could actually make yourself quite a pretty penny on how, as mature adults, to act in your child's best interest. What you're doing cannot be easy. I think to test the boundaries between the two of you. You've now managed to, you've now against, against, possibly against your own wishes, put yourself potentially back into at worst a conflict situation, at best a situation which will be terribly uncomfortable for you in some instances. But you've done it despite yourself for your child's best interests.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's been a lot of grace and understanding from both me and my ex-husband, and I must say, I think we've both just put ourselves aside for the best interests of our child, and I wish all parents in co-parenting relationships could do this.
But Robin, that's just it. That's just it. There you've drilled down in one sentence to what's supposed to happen. We have put everything aside for the best interest of our child. Putting things aside for the best interest of your child. Not I want, and I'm going to show you, and you this, and you that, and you said this, yeah, but you did that. And therefore, it's I'm putting everything aside for the best interest of my child. And Robert, that's the yardstick that the law requires of you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It can be done.
So, Robin, don't poo-poo that idea, hey? You know, you've got a lot of time on your hands now. Write the manual on co-parenting.
Well, it actually has been an idea for a while, so maybe I should.
Yeah, don't maybe do it.
Co-parenting in the time of COVID, putting the best interest, putting your own interest aside for the best interest of a child. And what you're saying, I'm telling you now, people will lap up what you have to say. It's once again, it's common sense. But people need to hear it. So, Robin, well done. And I'm serious. Write a little booklet. Write a little manual. I'm telling you, I give seminars on this issue quite often. And I will certainly invite you as a guest. I'm telling you now.
Nick has my contact details. So.
At the very least, Robin, I want you to start a hashtag. And maybe just start by tweeting out your musings of co-parenting in the time of COVID. I think it's very, very important. But once more. Halala to you, Robin Clark, there on the line in Johannesburg, talking about co-parenting in the time of COVID-19. Really mature approach to parenting there by Robin and her ex-husband. They've decided to at least live on the same property during the COVID-19 crisis that we're facing. And it is, for all intents and purposes, there, Shando, I mean, really in the best interests of the child there. They have the best of both worlds. They are living with mommy and daddy again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And mommy and daddy are doing it despite themselves. And that's what the law requires. That is the yardstick that the law requires, not the convenience of the parents, but what is in the best interest of the child. So once again, Robin Clark, shout out to you. It's absolutely amazing what you're doing. And should you decide to write this booklet, which I think is absolutely essential, put the good, the bad, and the ugly in there, just not the good. And I think a lot of people will benefit from it.
Okay, let's go to Tandile in Pretoria. Tandile.
Good morning, Nicholas.
Yeah, well, Mamzel, go ahead.
Yes, you know, I pick up to Robin. I think she needs to start a giving lessons. Myself and my ex are never... It doesn't look like we'll ever be, we'll be on talking terms. But we've got a son who is asthmatic, right? And with this, because he's been carrying on like this, my ex never wanted to listen to anything. And when the lawyer said, what happens if one of the parents gets sick? My worry in this 21 days is that what if my son gets sick? Do you know that I will not be even able maybe to even know that my son is sick? Maybe if he's in a position to call me or to tell me that, Mom, I'm sick, and maybe I must just pray that he becomes okay. You know, the thing is, it will not, for some parents out there who are like me, it's not going to just get better now during COVID-19, because it's always been like that. If my ex, I did the divorce thing alone, and he never appeared not once, and this is a lawyer, by the way, my ex is a lawyer, he knows the law, and he never appeared not once, let alone that I've got the custody, I've got what I'm supposed to get, but he never even followed one thing that he was supposed to follow from that decree. I wish, if you are like me and you can't afford a lawyer, I wish there was a hotline somewhere where at least when there's a decree of divorce, then you can say, okay, follow this. All I'm saying is that for some parents out there, it's not going to be better now. I just did not even try to say, look, isn't it better that my son stays with me because he's asthmatic? Because I know if he gets sick and you want to come to see him, I will not have a problem. But now it became about, everything is about him. So I'm saying to the lawyer there, look, I'm saying to the parents actually that, you know what, when he says he wants the child for the 21 days, I just smiled and waved and I said, you know what, the Lord knows. So it's not going to get better. The law in this country, there's nothing to fall back on as people like us who don't have, who can't afford lawyers.
All right, Sandile, let's hear what Shandu has to say about that. I mean, let's be quite frank, Shandu. There's a reason that lawyers cost money. And if you are in a position where your ex-spouse is a lawyer, you know, it's very easy to be legally dribbled in a difficult situation like that, like the one that Tandile is explaining.
Yeah, Nicholas and Tandile, it's certainly an unenviable position that she finds herself in. But at the end of the day, once again, the yardstick of what is acceptable for the child is the child's best interest. Now, if the child is with the other parent and the other parent doesn't have the necessary medication, the other parent doesn't have the necessary know-how or the necessary skill to look after the child, and the child has a medical condition like asthma, I would say that would be enough to go and collect that child. If that child is genuinely in threat of life or limb, that is exceptional circumstances. I would say it would almost be essential for her to collect the child, and the law would certainly be on her side. Now, the children's court aren't open. It's the urgent courts that are open at the moment, specifically in dealing with children's matters. And at the end of the day, it's like our system is like all Western systems. It's how much justice can you afford? But the system is also geared that you can indeed go and approach the court on your own. It's, of course, a lot more difficult. The process is in itself complex. But if your child is sick, or you believe your child might very well get sick because of his underlying medical condition, and the other parent is not able to look after the child, you certainly have a case. The question is, however, which you will have to answer to the court, is why, in the first place, during this 21 days, is a child with the other parent? Let's say you are the custodial parent, and knowing what you know now, you would have to answer to the court, why did you let the child go to the other parent? Of course, that would be a hurdle you would have to cross.
Look, I'm not even saying he's not capable of looking after my son, all right? But at the end of the day, I know that I'm a mother. I'm able to say, you can't go, it's a home base. There's a lot of people, and now this is COVID-19, right? And he's asthmatic. And you know how they just in the village say, okay, now you know what? This is for people in center. So all I'm saying is I know that if I, at least he was with me, I'll be able to say no. Because you know when divorce hits us, one of the parents or both of you can't even say no because they're trying to compensate. I think that's what's happening with him. So I must just sit here and be worried that, okay, I just hope he's inside. I just hope he's not going there and there. Because if he wants to go there, I know that he's going to say, no problem, go play with other boys. Go do this. So that's my worry because he's not a small boy. He's going to be 16. But all I'm saying is pick up to Robin, and it's not going to get better, unfortunately. You know, I started standing on my head and trying to, but all this time now, I decided whenever at least my son likes me. If he didn't, I'm telling you right now, I would have never seen my son during this divorce.
Tandile in Pretoria, thank you for being brave as well, sharing your story. It's never, ever easy when you are talking about an estranged marriage, a marriage that resulted in divorce, sharing the custody of your children. I salute every single one of you that have been brave enough to share the story with us. We've got an SMS in here, someone that wants to remain anonymous. I'm a mom to a six-year-old who's currently in lockdown with his father purely to keep the peace. He would not hear anything I had to say regarding what I believe is best for our son. After the lockdown, he will come back to me for 21 days. It's not ideal, but sometimes we need to see past the lockdown. My son needs to believe his parents can do the right thing. He needs parents who can still co-parent long after this is done. And I suppose, Shandu, that that is really crux of the matter, right? It's difficult now during COVID-19, but it's not as though it's going to get any easier afterwards. Joe in Midrand, you're a final call for the day. What's on your mind?
Joe, yes, thanks for taking my call. Joe, just I'm sure Shana would be well aware of some of the comments that I'll be making now. I have a personal situation where I've been going through a divorce now for 3 years, and we've had forensic investigation, child psychologist reports, urgent applications, and you name it, and you'll know very well that all of these things cost a lot of money in a high court. And I think just to link it to coronavirus and in a short context, is the root cause of the problem with alienation in this country, in my strong opinion, and not only mine. I've been part of various Fathers for Justice groups, but I'm not saying it's just fathers that are suffering from this, mothers too. But the root cause starts with the judges in the high courts of South Africa. I'm not going to name the judge, but I'll quote what he told advocates. He said, unless there is blood on the walls, okay, urgent applications, the child will go to the mother. That's a judge. I'd love to mention his name, but the problem lies with the judges. Because when the judges do not apply the Children's Act, which I would imagine was developed by a lot of psychologists and influential people, then what you do is you're opening up the system to be exploited. Because then what would happen is one or another parent starts the process of alienation, cries foul, runs to the various courts, it triggers an earnings potential for the legal system, lawyers, advocates, child psychologists, the whole lot of them, and they will exploit you. The first thing they will tell you when you go to a meeting is they'll say you can't be guaranteed of justice being done. This is the South African courts. It's filled with old people who are making decisions from the 1940s. That's the thing they'll tell you when you start off the meeting. The next thing they're going to ask you is what are your assets and liabilities, because they want to see if there's any money in it. And when there is money in it, then they're going to tell you that suddenly you've got rights and you must fight for it. I can tell you in my situation, 3 years later, I'm still not in court. Okay, I've had so many professionals deal with my matter, and I'm just one person. I can tell you there are hundreds and hundreds of fathers that have gone bankrupt fighting the system, and the problem starts with the judges. And it's only going to get worse. And nobody will take on the system because it's not in the legal system's interest to take on the judges because they're feeding the system with bad calls. That's just my comment.
Yo, Joe Midran, sounds like you've lost all faith whatsoever in the legal system. But let's just not just me.
Hundreds of fathers, and Shani will know exactly what I'm talking about. Not personally with him, but he is probably well aware of what I'm talking about.
Well, Joe, thank you very much for sharing your story with us, my man. I really appreciate it. Shandu, as we end off the show here, I mean, do you agree? And to what level as well? Because it's difficult, you know. As a layman, I'm not a legal expert, and I know covering court cases years and years as a journalist, the law can indeed be an ass, and the level of justice that you get depends on how fat your wallet is very often.
Well, at the end of the day, I agree with 99.9% of what Joe said. Absolutely. And you know what? But there are fathers out there, and there are, let's call it fathers and parents out there, who are not willing to be second-class citizens in their children's lives anymore. And they are taking on the system. And where I disagree with Joe, Joe says lawyers are not willing to take on the system. Well, I'm telling you something. I'm certainly willing to take on the system. I take the system on every day. And yes, the courts are stuck in, let's call it institutional memory. The courts are conservative in their thinking, and they are still, to a large extent, trapped in an era of when the father went out and earned the bacon and the mother sat at home and looked after the children. And it's a fight I have every single day. But we're winning that fight. We're winning that fight slowly, little bit by little bit. And it's like turning the Titanic. You do it one nudge at a time. And we're getting there. So I agree with most of what Joe has to say. I disagree with the fact that there are lawyers won't take on the system. There are definitely lawyers taking on the system, and I can name them. And I'm certainly one of them who are saying that if, for instance, the Children's Act says, I have equal parental responsibilities and rights, and you, sorry, you have full parental responsibilities and rights, and I have full parental responsibilities and rights. Well, if you're full and I have full, then it's not a leap of logic to think that we should have equal. And equal doesn't mean 4 hours every 2 weeks. That's not equal. And there's a lot of us who are standing up and saying, but that's not right. And I'm telling you something that's becoming more and more the norm. If geography allows, if the parents live geographically close to each other, is 1 week rotating. So a child can still go to the same school or go to the same creche. Why should the child not spend 1 week with the one parent and 1 week with the other parent?
Sander?
And that is becoming more and more common.
Sander, we unfortunately have to leave it at that. Find out more about this at Sander's website, divlaw.co.za. Always a pleasure speaking to you, but unfortunately, time's run out.